Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Thank you, Courtney. I'm Dave Cohen, WWL First News. Now back to Tommy Tucker on WWL.
Here are the results of our Taking It to the Text survey. I normally distribute them, but I forgot to do that, so I'll have to give them all myself. So what we do is we ask a question of the audience, right?
Right. Yeah, question.
6 o'clock, we ask a question.
Survey, poll.
A survey, a poll, if you will, and then we share the most popular slash more creative one. So it's a chance to take the pulse of the audience and also to see how creative they are, right?
Sounds good to me.
So that's what we do. So the question this morning happened to be, what is something you could say to your holiday company about their pet, that they could mistakenly think you were talking about their kid and so it would hurt their feelings?
Someone's coming to your house.
Somebody's at your house.
Kids and their pets.
They bring their kids and their pets. And then I make a comment. It's about your pet, but they would mistakenly think it was about the kid.
And be offended.
And be offended. That's right. Yeah, that's where the offense comes in, because okay, they would be offended. So some of the answers that have come in, I think number 8 or whatever number this would be, I think he needs a bath. 8. I think he needs a bath. Another one here.
Don't say that about the kid.
Do they always smell like that?
Oh, yeah. Shouldn't say that about somebody's kids.
Here's an interesting one. Is it a boy or a girl? Another one here. Do you know who the father is?
Why would you ask that about their pet?
I guess to see if it's, you know, what kind of dog it is, right?
Okay.
Are their eyes the same color?
Yeah, you wouldn't want a cur kid, but a cur pet is okay.
Yeah. And then there's this one. If he doesn't shut up, I'm going to put him out.
That one's actually kind of entertaining, yeah.
Oh, and the others were crap? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm just saying.
Well, no, I think that's what you did say, as a matter of fact.
Particularly if it's really cold. You know, you wouldn't want to put someone's children outside in the cold.
Somebody actually texted that in and said, if he doesn't shut up, I'm going to put him outside. So yeah. Thanks to whomever texted that in, because, you know, you basically saved the bit. I thank you. Thank you, Dave, because we were taking on a lot of water.
It's been a long 4 hours.
We're taking on a lot of water. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? We're taking on a lot of water.
We finished on a high note, though, yes.
And then all of a sudden, somebody came in and hit the bilge.
Bailed us out.
Hit the bilge button.
Oh, the bilge pump, yes.
Right. Kept us afloat. Thank you, Dave. Andrew Schwartz joins us now, professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU. He's been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years, and he's recently been focusing his attention on artificial intelligence. How you doing, professor?
Fantastic. Happy holidays. How are you?
Same to you, sir. Tell me about, for people that don't know, we throw the term AI around, about artificial intelligence. What exactly is that?
Sure. So artificial intelligence is a technological system that takes data, it learns from that data, and then extrapolates that data when we query it for additional questions or to provide insights into the data that we provided to the system.
So when it comes to companies that provide artificial intelligence, this is where I get a little bit confused. Are there top three companies? Does Google provide companies? Is there a difference between artificial intelligence and a search engine? Or if I go into the phone and I just open and I have an iPhone and I open the Safari browser, I guess it is, and I say, tell me about cooking gumbo. And I just put that in and I get a text and it says, AI overview, gumbo is a rich, heavily seasoned, blah, blah, blah. Where did that come from?
Sure. So there's different types of artificial intelligence. The one that we're used from the consumer perspective lately has been generative AI. And that's things like ChatGPT, or if you go into Facebook and you look for somebody, it says Meta AI. That's AI that's embedded within Facebook. And then so Meta has some, and Google, for example, like you just brought up, instead of searching for something now, you can go and ask Gemini to find it for you and not have to go through all of those different searches.
So wait, let me slow you down for a second. So when I went to Google just now, that was a feature of Google called Gemini, that was the artificial intelligence?
Yeah, so they have a product by the back end of that called Gemini.
Okay.
So it historically, what happened when you search, it would give you all those search results. Now you see that it summarizes those for you. So what it's doing is it's using artificial intelligence to go to those websites and summarizing those for you.
So is anybody vetting any of that? Because this tells me about, you know, I just threw the gumbo question in there, just popped into my head. Key components, Holy Trinity, protein, blah, 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 blah. Is anybody vetting this to make sure that it's accurate? Or is this just what the Gemini has amassed from all of the different things that, for whatever reason, this Gemini server, I don't want to hurt myself using the wrong term, has heard about gumbo?
So each of the different platforms that we use, whether it's ChatGPT or Gemini, or you may hear of Claude or Anthropic, each of those different platforms trains their systems or their algorithms on different data. So the summary that you're finding is based upon what Gemini has chosen to train its data upon. And you raise a really good point, however, which is there's no human in the loop. So if what happens, the question is, what happens if Google was never trained on what is gumbo? Well, if it was never trained on that particular perspective, then it would make it up. And we call that a hallucination. So a hallucination is when the data, the system was never trained on the data or the question being asked of it.
Tell me that part again.
So if a system wasn't trained on a particular set of data, then it'll basically make it up or hallucinate. But the challenge, however, is that the system doesn't know what it doesn't know.
Okay. I also put in, what should I get my father for Christmas? And it said, for Christmas gifts for your dad, focus on his hobbies, et cetera, et cetera. But at some point, it also recommends specific items that are brand specific, not generic, you know, like a grill. It mentions this grill or that grill or the other grill, which makes me wonder, well, wait a minute now, it's artificial intelligence, but it's actually selling me a product, right?
So to this point, we haven't reached the point yet where AI can operate like a Facebook or a Google. So if you have a Facebook feed and you scroll through that, you see you're always being offered up advertisements. And Meta actually does use artificial intelligence to predict what they think that you would like based on demographic information and where you live and basically how you interact with it. However, to this point, we haven't hit the point yet where AI has been advertisements the similar way that we have inside of Facebook or inside of Google.
So it's not pushing me on a specific product?
Not yet, but the partnerships are headed in that direction. If you look earlier this year, you see that Walmart actually signed a deal with OpenAI for ChatGPT. So if we think about it kind of historically, if you're a business owner, one of the big trends was search engine optimization, or SEO. With search engine optimization, when you put something in Google as a consumer, the business was trying to elevate their ranking so that they appeared first in the search rankings. However, increasingly, just as you said, we're going to AI. So what we're going to see over the years ahead is a move towards AI search optimization, which is how can we put products within OpenAI, within ChatGPT, that would align with what we want.
So how is that changing the way people shop? I'm trying to understand this, Professor, but you got to go slow because, you know, I'm having a hard enough time with my real intelligence, let alone artificial intelligence.
Absolutely. So let me give you an example. So I have four kids, 20 to 16. So my son, my 20-year-old, is an avid college football fan. He loves it. Every single Saturday, that's where he's planted watching college football. I'm sure no one here can relate to that scenario.
No, not at all.
Just like everyone else, we're hit with the rise of streaming costs, right? So Hulu is $110 this month, and so he wants his own account. So, you know, it seems a bit excessive for me. So I decided to go to ChatGPT, and I said, my son is a college football fan. Give me an idea of how I can create a lower cost structure of streaming for him so he can watch the games. And ChatGPT said, create a combination of ESPN Plus, Paramount, and Peacock. It then said, well, the problem with that is that you're going to miss conferences like the Mountain West or, you know, maybe the Division II games. So it was able to lead me to a decision without me having to sit there and do all the research to find the annual costs and figure out what the cheapest alternative would be.
But the cynical part of me thinks that that's not really in my best interest, that, you know, it's the old thing about if it's too good to be true, it is, or it's not. I guess, Professor, what I'm thinking there is that there's somebody behind the scenes somewhere that's trying to game me into doing this or doing that, and you're saying that's not where we are now?
So you raise a really good point as well, which is the need for legislation around this. Because the truth is, we really don't know how these systems are being trained. Because to this point, generative AI companies haven't been made to tell us how they're training all of these models. So if you actually do the research deep within technical documents and white papers, Google Gemini will tell you that they basically trained it on proprietary data. Well, I don't know what that is. So if I don't know what that is, how can I know what is coming out of the system? So what I do personally is I use a combination of multiple different approaches to see. So I'll go back and verify afterwards. So I'll use AI as my first approach, but I never take myself out of the loop or trust it completely. And I think that really is the key to artificial intelligence moving forward, which is we're not trying to take people out. We're trying to make our jobs and our lives easier.
Because even at that, with what it told you, even though there's nothing nefarious at play, it could just be wrong and not be giving you the best assortment of streaming services that you could have, right?
Absolutely. So I usually take it one step further. Once it gives you my answer, I say, provide me the evidence or the proof or the links to where you've arrived at your decision. And so it would point me to the platforms and the areas that help me to so that I could verify myself. And this is why I've been really key on pushing the term co-intelligence, which is that AI is not there to replace you. It's to make you smarter and to act on your behalf to make your life better.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. I find this fascinating. You know, Professor, I can talk to you for 12 hours about this and understand about 3 hours of it, but that's all right. That's why you're on. And to try to help us understand artificial intelligence, Andrew Schwartz, our guest, Professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU, been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years and has recently been focusing his attention on AI. And, Professor, AI goes back how far?
The 1940s.
So there you go. We'll be back in a flash, WWL.
You will get a sentimental feeling when you hear voices singing, let's be jolly, deck the halls with boughs of holly.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here for Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Don we now our gay apparel.
It is 9:27. We're talking about artificial intelligence with our friend Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU. So let me go to Gemini is Google, professor. I got that right?
It is indeed. Good job.
All right, so let me go here and say, what should I get the professor for Christmas? And it's going to give me an answer for a thoughtful, appropriate Christmas gift for a professor. Focus on small, useful, or consumable items like quality coffee, tea, nice pens, desk accessories, or a sincere personalized card, keeping it modest in price, around $20 to $30. To show your appreciation without being extravagant, at heartfelt notes are often valued most. Would that fit you or not? Would that, was that a good answer?
Great. Pretty close. I love a good note, that's for sure.
So the reason I ask that is this just an innocuous thing where it's like, okay, it'll help you figure out what to get somebody? Or, because I'm getting a lot of text about this, people concerned about losing their jobs. What I did just now, that's not a thing that's going to cost anybody their job, right? I mean, that just helps me out.
It does just help you out. But the reality is that AI is going to be transforming industries and jobs, and that part is true. The good news is what we've seen to this point is that job loss hasn't occurred due to AI. But what we are seeing is that people are taking jobs as people are leaving, and they're replacing them with technology. And then they're rehiring people for better jobs that are better paying. So we've actually seen so far a lot of it's neutral in terms of the evidence, but we've not seen the mass layoffs and the mass firings that we were concerned with regards to AI.
Knowing you were coming on, it popped into my mind as I was talking to the drug company about, you know, with this prescription getting filled or that one, and it was a call service center. And I'm not trying to be mean here or inappropriate or anything, but the person didn't speak English very well, and that is my native tongue, and we were having a hard time, especially when it comes to names of these medications, trying to figure out what was approved, what was not approved, et cetera, et cetera. Is that like a customer call center? Is that the kind of thing that AI could lend itself to and maybe be beneficial, while maybe people in this country wouldn't lose their job? And again, I'm not trying to be political about this at all. I'm just trying to be practical about it, where it could be beneficial to everybody, where it would enhance the communication process.
Absolutely. So I was talking to a Fortune 50 bank about their use of AI, and I said, well, what are you doing? And it's going to be brought to the call center, because that was the number one place. And I said, all right, that means that you're going to use AI and that you're going to take away jobs, and why we don't need people to call center anymore, right? And that's what my inclination was, right? Mm-hmm. And their perspective was actually quite the opposite. What they employed AI to do is, you know how every time you call in, and we all love those press one for this, press two for that. And I particularly love how it says the menu options have changed, like I memorized your menu options, right? So if you think about it, instead of doing that, imagine if we could use natural language to actually say what you were trying to do. And that's what the bank did.
Use what, so, professor? What language?
It's called natural language, okay. The language that we speak.
Okay.
So you could say, for example, I want to deposit money from my checking to my savings account. Well, we can all agree that you shouldn't have to pay a call center employee to do that. So what they did is they actually took a lot of the common questions and they allowed people just to ask the question themselves. And then when you hit by the time you hit the employee at the call center, you've already exhausted the easy issues and they can just troubleshoot the hard ones. And what they found is that their customers actually got happier and the call center employers got happier because they didn't have to do rote kind of things like just transferring money. Mm-hmm. So it actually made the bank more efficient in the end.
What do companies have to do now, both large and small, to put themselves in the best position? Because it would seem as though this is a very, obviously, business is a very competitive atmosphere. If your competition is ahead of the game when it comes to AI, then they're going to have a distinct competitive advantage over you, are they not?
They are indeed. So the first thing you need to do is begin by identifying a very easy use case, a pilot case. What is something where you could see that could be very easily automated with AI, where it's not that it would lose jobs, but it would make your company better and make your employees better? So begin with simply identifying that use case and then pilot it and try. And what you'll find is through experimentation, you'll learn how to do things better and you'll grow as a company overall.
It would seem like inventory, the AI would lend itself toward inventory, yes or no?
Oh, absolutely.
Managing inventory?
Absolutely. So for years, we've always thought about the concept of predictive analytics. And predictive analytics was based upon everything in the past. How can I take advantage of the future? But analytics kind of had some limitations. It really wasn't predictive always in the best way. It didn't take into account a lot of externalities. AI can take into advantage a lot more externalities of what's going on in the world around us. So you're able to predict a lot stronger using AI now.
Is AI taking over jobs now?
Not yet. I know that if we listen to the words of like Andy Jassy and some of the people in Silicon Valley, they're saying how it's as good as an entry-level position. In practice, however, we're not finding that to be true. We're not finding
what
that.
What does that mean, as good as an entry-level position?
We could take over someone's job who would be at an entry-level kind of position. Mm-hmm. The reality is, however, in practice, we haven't found that to be true yet.
Give me an example of an entry-level position where AI could or potentially take over when it comes to like being some type of administrative clerk or something, or what?
Yeah, let's think about medical coding or like a court transcriber, something that is simply like very transcription oriented, that's very document heavy, or searching for documents, things like that, things that where AI could do discovery for you on that behalf. There's even been concerns about paralegals, for example, digging into court cases and looking for precedents. But there's a prime example. I can tell AI all I want to about what court case I'm trying to pursue, but the reality is that you go to law school to understand that the law is nuanced, and there's a lot of nuance in the law and precedents in the law, so AI can't always rely upon that.
Well, Westlaw, and I don't mean to make it specific to law, but that's been around for a long time in terms of precedent, right?
Oh, absolutely. And there's been a lot of precedents before. What kind of makes me laugh is a lot of times we think that the world is coming to an end with technology. And if we look back, when Wikipedia came out, a lot of us said, that's the end of how we learn. That's the end of encyclopedias. And that never happened. So really, we have to think about AI and put it in the proper perspective.
Because when you see attorneys in the movies going to the big row of law books, that's not factual at all. Now they just type it, right? I mean, they just type it into
Absolutely.
The screen and it comes back, et cetera. So before we let you go, for people that are terribly concerned about AI heading into 2026, if I were to talk to you on December 22nd of 2026, what kind of advances will we have seen in AI?
Great question. So, of course, I'm not a futurist, but I can give some ideas of where I think
you can
we're
see where
head.
It's going, right? Yeah,
absolutely. You brought up regulations. We saw last week how the president signed a new order that said that states aren't allowed to legislate AI. I expect that to be a big issue as we move into 2026, and we'll see if any states try to move in that direction or not, and what happens when they do. So expect that, especially here in Louisiana, where the courts just struck down our approach to regulate social media for minors. So expect the courts to play an outsized role in AI in the year ahead. Expect the models to get better. Expect to see more AI in your life. Right now, if you have an Apple phone, it's AI is part of it. It's going to continue to be part of it as well. So expect to see it more and more part of your day-to-day life.
Tell me about state regulation real quick again.
Yeah, so the president basically issued an executive order that said no state is allowed to regulate AI. It has to be done at the federal level.
And the reason now, the rationale for that?
That if we have a patchwork of different laws, which kind of is where we're at right now, it's what's happening is it's holding back innovation because of the way that it's being legislated. Right now, the companies are having to figure out state-by-state legislation, and it's holding them back in terms of development.
And the only way to enforce that would be through some type of geofencing, I'm guessing, right?
Absolutely, which is why state-level legislation doesn't ever work. If you look at what's happening, for example, when you try to legislate things like social media, all that people do is use VPNs to pretend like they're not where they are. That's why state-level regulation of technology never works.
Any final thoughts, Professor?
Happy holidays, and enjoy those non-AI moments with your family. I'll hug someone special and enjoy that special time with them.
Thank you, Professor. We're done. Our business is concluded. They were telling me something in my ear, but we're good. Thank you, sir. And I'll send you that personal note.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Appreciate it. All right, 9:37. We'll take a break. Come back. Tommy Tucker, WWL. So honored to have Tyler Bridges on. I get choked up when I mention your name. Tyler, how you doing?
Hey, Tommy. I don't want you to choke.
Tyler Bridges, staff writer for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, author of several books, and he is a talented author. You can go to tylerbridges.com to find out more about the books that he has, and they make excellent Christmas gifts, and they're fun reads. They really are. Before we get to Helena Moreno and the compare and contrast with what Buddy Romer faced, let's talk about this Greenland thing, if we can, Tyler, because I don't know, is there any substance to this, or is this just style? What's going on with the governor in Greenland and the appointment from President Trump?
Yeah, so this was a total surprise. It came last night, the announcement from the president that he is appointing Governor Landry to be a special envoy to Greenland. You know, the United States wants to take over Greenland, or President Trump wants to take it over. So the first question is, what does this mean for Governor Landry? And he put out a tweet saying, hey, I'm continuing as governor. This is a volunteer job. But it's a complete mystery why he would choose Governor Landry for this position. Governor Landry has no foreign experience at all. I don't even think he's traveled very much overseas, but he is certainly someone who's very loyal to the president, and we know that the president values loyalty more than anything else.
And I know the only Venn diagram I could draw would be minerals, right? I mean, in a way, because that's where the interest is with Greenland.
Well, it is seen as an important place as a Arctic shipping lane, and you know, it's very close to Russia. But one thing that we should note, Tommy, is that officials in Greenland and Denmark are angry at President Trump's decision last night to announce the governor as his special envoy. They are fearful that this means that the Trump administration is stepping up its efforts to try to take over Greenland, which only has 57,000 residents, but it's a huge mass of land.
Maybe it's the navigation of waterways. Maybe that goes in the Venn diagram as well. Tell me what Helena Moreno is facing and how it compares and contrasts with what Buddy Romer was facing. I saw your story that you wrote at NOLA.com that really interested me as you compared and contrasted the two.
Yeah, so in 1987, Buddy Romer was the longest of long shots, a little-known congressman from Shreveport-Bossier area, and rocketed from last place to win the governor's race. And when he took over, he found out that the budget situation for the state was much worse than he had realized, that the Edwards administration, you know, he defeated Edwin Edwards. And so the Edwards administration disclosed privately right after the election that the state could go broke by the time Romer took office in March of 1988. And so it was a very interesting situation where the outgoing governor, Edwin Edwards, allowed the incoming governor, Buddy Romer, even before he took office, to essentially take over the budget and begin taking steps to deal with that budget crisis. And when Helena Moreno when I read of her election and the revelations about the budget crisis she's facing, it really struck me as sort of deja vu all over again, going back to 1987-88, because as your listeners know, Tommy, Mayor Cantrell is bequeathing a big, big budget deficit for the incoming Mayor Moreno, and it's really a surprise. Mayor-elect Moreno has already begun to have to take steps working with the city council and also Governor Landry in the state to get a $125 million short-term loan to be able to make payroll. But there are very similar parallels between, again, what Governor Romer inherited in 1988 and what Helena Moreno is about to inherit on January 12th.
What about the politics of it? How did Buddy Romer go about navigating the politics of it to get some kind of consensus between Republicans and Democrats? And what kind of similarities are there or differences with Helena Moreno?
Yeah, it's a great question. Buddy Romer, he had taken over. He defeated the then unpopular Governor Edwards, who was in Governor Romer's his saying was slay the dragon, let's do the Romer revolution. So as an incoming governor, he had a big, big political honeymoon behind him and a public wanting to make changes and legislators who were receptive to the changes that Governor Romer wanted to make. And I think Helena Moreno is facing a similar situation. She has very good relations with the current city council that has already begun to make changes to reduce the budget deficit, and also with the new council that will take office with her. And she's a person who knows how to work with her fellow elected officials. And I think she benefits from the unpopularity of LaToya Cantrell. I think a lot of people see the mayor-elect as a bright new face. And after things not going well under Mayor Cantrell, so I think the public and the city council are going to be supportive of the changes she's going to be trying to make to wrestle this budget gap into focus.
One thing that puzzles me, whether it's back then with Buddy Romer or now with Helena Moreno and LaToya Cantrell, is how there can be that much secrecy when it comes to budgetary policy and government money.
That's another great question. And certainly with the current situation, I think it's hard to understand how the city council didn't have a better handle on that the city's finances were going in the absolute wrong direction. There were warning signs early on, and it seems to me that why wasn't the council digging into this? And I think it's particularly the new CAO for the city, the top appointed official for Helene Moreno, Joe Geruso. He's very well liked, but he was the budget chairman for the city council. Was he asking the tough questions that needed to be asked to ferret out that the budget situation for the city was getting so much worse? So, yeah, it's a hard thing to understand why no one else caught it.
Thank you, Tyler. I appreciate your time as always. I really do. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I in talking to people in New Orleans, I think people are very optimistic about the new mayor, and that seems like the city's heading in a new direction and that she's going to get the budget problems under control.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Tyler Bridges, a very gifted writer, staff writer for Times Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, author of several books. You can go to tylerbridges.com and see what they're all about. One of my favorites is Several Laterals and a Trombone, about the end of the Stanford UCLA game, Cal game. That's what it was, right? Cal game. 9:52 now, taking a break. WWL.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.